50th, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett and Sam in today. Sam, I drove in here around 9:15, 9:30. Really nice drive. I've kind of been buried in the bunker downstairs here at AM 950. I just ran upstairs a few minutes ago. What's all this white stuff outside, man?
I don't know. I came in on a nice drive on Crosstown as well, open traffic, and Matt comes in saying he's having a, it took him 15 minutes to get here.
Wow, yeah, normally it's like a 5 or 10 minute drive. So yeah, you came in here around, what, 12:30 or 1 o'clock, so it was still pretty nice at that point, wasn't it? Yeah, so I guess we're heading towards that time of year. It's going to be a fun drive home for both you and me. You're going over to where? Is it St. Paul or Minneapolis?
South Minneapolis. Yeah. So that crosstown stretch will be a whole lot of fun with the snow during rush hour.
That's going to be worse than mine. I just have to go up 494. I'm kind of in the Plymouth, Minnetonka area. 494 can get backed up quite a bit, but I know it's nothing like crosstown. That's the worst.
I'm considering just staying off the freeway and letting all those accidents happen away from me and staying on side streets to get home.
That's kind of a problem, though. What side streets can you use? I guess there's kind of 78th Street maybe, or yeah, American, or what do you normally use as your side?
I've never actually come to the station with a side street. If American Boulevard, probably, if it comes out here,
yeah,
I could probably take that, I think.
That, or as we do our traffic report, probably if you find Viking Drive, that actually changes to 78th. That's kind of a slick shortcut, too, now that I think about it. But I think that's enough traffic and weather for now, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Feel like a news station. Well, let's dive into our topics today. Well, one of the priorities of the Trump administration since he took office has been trying to solve problems with the Veterans Administration, or the VA. And one of the solutions Trump and congressional Republicans have proposed is more privatization of the VA, easy for me to say. But is this a good idea, and what types of consequences would that have? Joining us to talk about the VA and privatization is Suzanne Gordon. She's an expert on VA issues and author of multiple books, including her most recent Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans. She'll also be in town, by the way, for a reading and discussion at the Eastside Freedom Library in St. Paul coming up on Friday at 7 o'clock. Suzanne, welcome to the program. Glad to have you with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you join us as well. I know you're out there in New York City, so glad you could take some time out of your day on your cell phone and get a good connection with us and spend some time. So in a basic overview, what does the VA do for our veterans? How is it run now? And how is it different from private health care providers?
So the veterans, I have a bit of laryngitis. The Veterans Health Administration is the largest healthcare system in the country, and it serves 9 million veterans. It provides them with comprehensive, integrated care. It has way better mental health care, primary care, geriatric care, end-of-life care, rehabilitation services, all of which are coordinated and integrated in kind of one-stop shopping at, say, the Minneapolis VA, for example. And you can't find that kind of care in the private sector. I have a friend who's an Iraq veteran, and he has 16 different problems, from mental health, chronic pain, and he gets one-stop shopping at the VA. He told me that if he had to go to the private sector, he would be, I'm so sorry about my voice, but he would have to go to all these different doctors all over town. And as he put it, I'd be in a ditch. And the VA also takes care of patients who have very complex needs. They have traumatic brain injury and PTSD. And then they have cancer, and then they have asthma or all kinds of problems related to just being alive and being a human being and aging. And the VA takes care of all of that. And the VA caregivers coordinate with each other. They talk to each other face-to-face, which doesn't happen in the private sector.
Well, so often we hear the narrative, I hear this a lot on different media outlets, that the VA is broken and it needs a massive overhaul. Do you agree with that assessment? Is the VA broken right now?
No, I think the VA is, and it's not just me who thinks this, study after scientific study after scientific study shows that the VA delivers care that is equal to or superior to that in the private sector at lower cost. What you hear in the media is often a result of a concerted effort by ultra-right libertarians like the Koch brothers who are trying to kill the VA because they hate unions, they hate government provision of care, and there's many in the hospital industry that want to capture the many billions of dollars in the VA budget and use it for themselves and their own enrichment. And I think that the private sector healthcare system is broken and needs to be more like the VA. The VA doesn't need to be more like the private healthcare system, and veterans will not fare well in the private sector system.
Hey, tell you what, Suzanne, I actually want to take an early break. I want to chat with you here during the break because this is a really important issue, and I know it's tough to battle with that laryngitis. I've had that before in the past. So let's go ahead and take a time out. We'll be back in just a few minutes here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
There are lots of ways to stay comfortable in a Minnesota winter. Hot Cocoa Warm Socks and Standards Winter Comfort Sale, where you can save up to $2,090 on a brand new 96% energy efficient furnace. There's also great deals on a variety of other furnaces and boilers. Don't wait. Unlike winter, these deals end November 30th. Learn more about Standard's Winter Comfort Sale at standardheatingdeals.com/radio. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
As veterans, we committed to protect our country. Sometimes, we forget that the biggest challenge can be asking for support. Call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. It matters.
The specialists at Warner Stelling had a blast during Black Friday. So much fun, we decided to keep the party going with guaranteed Black Friday appliance savings on top brand dishwashers, laundry pairs, ranges, refrigerators, and complete kitchen packages at Warner Stelling.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Hello, fellow AM 950 listeners. This is Jaja from Nightingale at 26 in Lindale. Come experience our delicious signature dishes and exciting rotation of inventive seasonal fare for my wife and chef, Carrie, and her team. Nightingale is the perfect place to gather for any occasion with our extensive wine, beer, and cocktail selection, along with our dedication to great service. We offer a full menu every day from 4 to 1 a.m., two award-winning daily happy hours, and weekend brunch at 10. More at nightingalempls.com.
November is Govember at Rudy Luther Toyota. Rudy Luther needs to clear their inventory of fantastic 2018 Toyotas before the end of the year. Come see the popular and cool 2018 Camry with 0.9% financing to well-qualified buyers. And Rudy Luther is a top 10 largest volume Toyota certified pre-owned dealer in the country. The reason why? A second to none reconditioning process, great selection, and the best prices. November is Govember, so get going over to Rudy Luther Toyota, 5 miles west of downtown Minneapolis on 394.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, talking about VA privatization and whether that's a good idea or not such a good idea. We're speaking with Suzanne Gordon. She's the author of Wounds of War, author of many books about the VA. She's also having an event coming up in St. Paul on Friday. It's a reading and discussion about her new book. Suzanne, I know you're battling laryngitis, so I think we're talking during the break. We're going to try to bring you on next week so we can do a more in-depth interview, but I know talking to you during the break, we kind of wanted to end things on a little bit more of a positive note, so this will be a little bit of a teaser for our interview next week. What thoughts did you want to leave us with in terms of privatization of the VA?
Well, I think veterans and their families can stop this and can fight to fully fund and fully staff the VA. And I would encourage everyone to call their congressman and senator and tell them they want real choice, which means the VA is their first choice, which is, in fact, what most veterans say, but they can't keep it to themselves. And I think it's also our responsibility as citizens, even if we're not veterans, to fight against privatization and to keep the VA and strengthen it and make it what it really is, which is a national treasure.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. That's Suzanne Gordon. We're going to speak with her a little bit later on, probably next week at some point. Hopefully when you're over that laryngitis, hope you feel better, Suzanne. That's never fun to deal with, but hopefully we'll be able to chat with you next week and you'll have a much stronger sounding voice.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Suzanne. That's rough, isn't that, Sam? I don't know if you ever had laryngitis before.
Yeah, it's not fun at all.
Yeah, not fun. Yeah, especially if you're you and me and we have to work on the radio. Yeah, it's a rough going. So we'll be speaking with Suzanne probably at some point next week. But again, make sure you check out that event she's hosting on Friday in St. Paul. It's a reading and discussion about VA privatization. It's at the East Side Freedom Library in St. Paul, coming up Friday at 7 o'clock. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you have any thoughts on the privatization of the VA, as the Trump administration and Republicans have been moving in that direction, well, since Trump took office back in early 2017. Switching gears to another issue that has, of course, been in the news over the past few days, and that is the controversy that is going on at the border right now. Of course, over the weekend, we saw those really terrible images of children getting tear gassed as they were trying to enter the United States along with their parents. It's led to all sorts of backlash and all sorts of controversy and discussion. We have people on the right claiming that, well, Obama did it, so why are liberals mad about it now? And as I brought up in a discussion yesterday with Randy, he didn't do it quite to the same degree that the Trump administration is doing it, but even though Obama did, it wasn't right then, and that doesn't make it right now. So I wanted to bring up some other aspects of this immigration debate because a lot of people from this so-called caravan are primarily coming from three Central American countries, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. What I find interesting about this is that among these three countries, all three of them have histories of having their governments overthrown by the United States and our government and our military. Didn't matter whether it was a Democratic administration or a Republican administration, we have basically been meddling in Central American politics, although we have meddled in South American politics as well over the past few decades, but especially in Central America. And the question I posed is, if we're the ones that are destabilizing this region and overthrowing democratically elected governments, does that actually leave us partially responsible when we have people from these countries, these war-ravaged, gang-ravaged countries, they want to come to the United States? I kind of think you have to grant them asylum because we're the ones that essentially broke these countries. Later on, hopefully next week or maybe the week after, I'm going to try to speak to someone who knows a little bit more about the history of these three countries, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, and U.S. intervention in these three countries. But I did print off a little bit of a timeline for all three of these just to give you kind of a basic overview of how we've interfered in these three Central American countries. Well, let's start off with El Salvador. We have a long history of interfering with affairs in that country. So starting way back in 1932, a peasant rebellion led by communist leader Faberuno Marti, probably butchering some of those names, so do apologize for that, challenges the authority of the government. 10,000 to 40,000 communist rebels, many who were indigenous, are systematically murdered by the regime of military leader Maximiliano Hernandez Martinez, who is the nation's acting president. The United States and Great Britain, having bankrolled the nation's economy and owning the majority of their exports of coffee and plantations and railways and naval support to quell the rebellion. So we already started interfering in El Salvador and back in 1932 when they had peasants trying to rebel against an authoritarian government. The United States and Great Britain interfered and quelled that rebellion. 1980 into the 1990s as well, there was also a civil war ravaged between the military-led government and the leftist rebel Fabruno Marti National Liberation Front. The Reagan administration, which was under its Cold War containment policy, offers significant military assistance to the authoritarian government. Again, this is a right-wing authoritarian government that's backed by the United States. And they essentially ran the war for the government against these peasant rebels. Now, what I find interesting about this in El Salvador is that in 1984, lots of El Salvadorian immigrants tried to make their way to the United States seeking asylum. And similar to what we're seeing today, only 3% at the time back in 1984 of El Salvadorians were actually approved for asylum in the United States. You can go on and on with our interference in that country. We also have plenty of examples from Guatemala and also Honduras as well. A big example, actually, of a Democrat interfering with affairs in Honduras, and specifically Hillary Clinton, back in 2009. As I said, it's not a left or a right issue. Back in 2009 in Honduras, left-leaning and, get this, democratically elected President Manuel Zelaya, who pursued progressive policies like raising the minimum wage and subsidizing public transportation, he's basically exiled and thrown out of power due to a military coup. The coup is staged after Zelaya announces his intentions to hold a referendum on replacing what was a 1982 constitution that was enacted back when they had an authoritarian, more right-wing president. The United States, which again, under the leadership of Hillary Clinton and her State Department, refused to join international calls for the immediate and unconditional return of Zelaya to power. So, two examples right there, one from Ronald Reagan and also from the Obama/Clinton administration, of interfering with the affairs of these two Central American countries. Guatemala, same deal has happened throughout the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. So if we're the ones that are messing around with the affairs of all of these countries, it kind of strikes me that we're partially responsible for probably accepting some of these immigrants and refugees into our country. We're the ones that broke it. I mean, I could maybe buy it if it was some, you know, I don't know, some random country. I'll pick some Asian country. What could I think of over there that we haven't necessarily interfered with? That's actually probably kind of an ironic statement to make. Probably. What country haven't we interfered with?
That's a tough one.
Yeah,
to
yeah. I stumped myself right there. But
does Antarctica count?
Yeah, there we go.
We've probably interfered there too somehow.
That's actually not a bad example. Let's say there was a population of people who lived in Antarctica, like 200,000 people, and they all of a sudden wanted to immigrate to the U.S. I could buy that argument because, by and large, we haven't interfered in that area. But it is different when we look at these three Central American countries. So I don't know. I kind of think we need to look at it from this perspective when we see this caravan of refugees trying to make their way to the United States. Think of it from that angle. Don't think of it saying, well, you know, they should be coming here legally. Because legally, it's extremely tough. It's like a six-month wait period. And even then, as we saw back in the Reagan administration, only 3% of refugees from these Latin American countries were even approved for asylum. We've also heard the argument being made by the Trump administration that they're nothing but criminals that are trying to make their way into the country. They're criminals, they're bad people, and they're just here to ruin our country. Well, interesting. I brought this up a few months ago when I was hosting the show here on AM 950, and they've actually done studies on crime statistics for illegal immigrants and refugees. And this specific study was actually done by the Cato Institute. Now, if you're not familiar with the Cato Institute, this isn't some big lefty think tank. It's actually a libertarian institute, the Cato Institute. I think, Sam, you're shaking your head in there. You're familiar with them.
I've heard about them.
Yeah. So what they did a few years ago was analyzed the Texas data to make a comparison of immigrants in the country illegally and also native-born residents who would technically be, well, I guess, legal Americans for lack of a better term. So in a recent post, they noted in 2015, Texas police made a little over 815,000 arrests of native-born Americans, a little less than 38,000 arrests of immigrants in the country illegally, and 20,000 arrests of legal immigrants. Now, given the relative populations for each group, they wrote that the arrest rate for illegal immigrants was 40% below that of native-born Americans. In addition, they wrote the homicide arrest rates for native-born Americans was about 46% higher than the illegal immigrant homicide arrest rate. So that argument kind of goes out the window that illegal immigrants commit crimes at a high rate. Of course, whenever they do commit a crime, Donald Trump and Republicans are all over this, including little Steve King in Iowa. Remember when, what was the name of the Iowa woman who was murdered? I think Molly Tibbetts was her name. I know they were trying to publicize that, but you can always find that one outlier of a case of an illegal immigrant that commits a crime. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you have any thoughts on the immigration debate and whether we do actually have a responsibility to help out some of these people who were largely pushed out of their own countries due to U.S. intervention. A couple final thoughts on this as well, going back to that Cato Institute survey. They also attempted to provide national estimates. Again, we were talking a couple minutes ago how they did studies in Texas showing that illegal immigrants committed crimes at a lower rate than native-born Americans. They attempted to do this on a national basis as well. So back on June 4th of 2017, they used data from the Census Bureau's American Community Survey for 2016 and applied statistical modeling to estimate the number of incarcerated immigrants in the country illegally. It filtered the data using characteristics correlated with being an immigrant in the country illegally, such as whether someone is a non-citizen but has not served in the military or received Social Security income. The research concluded illegal immigrants are 47% less likely to be incarcerated than natives. So you can't necessarily pin down how many actually are in the country illegally. But Texas, you actually do have a pretty good idea of that, because I believe in Texas, if you're arrested, they actually do ask you if you're in the country illegally, or they actually do some research on that, which is different than nationally and, of course, other parts of the country. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And one final note on immigration before we head to the break. The Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee, that's a group we've spoken to many times on the show, they're actually going to be holding a rally coming up on Friday at 5:15 at the Minneapolis Federal Building to stand in solidarity with members of the caravan and also other immigrants as well. Again, that's Friday, 5:15 at the Minneapolis Federal Building. You can find more information, just basically Google Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee or MIRAC. Coming up next on the other side of the break, we'll get back into some local issues, some news and notes regarding Amy Klobuchar. She's been in the news. We'll talk about her in just a couple seconds on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush, 236.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950. I've been telling you about my friends at Snap Construction, who are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior construction company in the metro. Don't just take my word for it. Take a look at all their reviews online. Winter is the most cost-effective time of the year to complete your construction project. A majority of Minnesotans choose to have their work completed on their home in the summer when they should be enjoying the weather. As a result, the demand for labor in the summer is much higher. The most cost-effective way to improve or restore your home is in the winter due to the lower demand. Right now, Snap Construction is offering an additional 30% off of labor to the AM950 listeners on your next construction project between now and the end of February. Call 612-333-SNAP and mention AM950 for an additional 30% off. As always, Snap Construction stands by their work with a lifetime craftsmanship warranty. Don't wait to get a free estimate by calling 612-333-SNAP or find them online at snapconstruction.com. Financing options available.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Catch New Beginnings with Freddie Bell, Saturdays at 11 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Total Dog Company exists for people who are serious about their dogs. People who want the best nutrition and the best gear for their dogs. Total Dog Company's mission is to provide high-quality, practical food and gear for dogs and only dogs. Nothing frou-frou or frivolous. Nothing with suspect ingredients. No cat food or wild bird food. Totally dog, from head to wagging tail. Find us in New Hope off of 169 at 9432 36th Avenue North and at TotalDogCompany.com.
There are lots of ways to stay comfortable in a Minnesota winter. Hot Cocoa Warm Socks and Standards Winter Comfort Sale, where you can save up to $2,090 on a brand new 96% energy efficient furnace. There's also great deals on a variety of other furnaces and boilers. Don't wait. Unlike winter, these deals end November 30th. Learn more about Standard's Winter Comfort Sale at standardheatingdeals.com/radio. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Enjoy a delicious home-cooked breakfast or lunch away from the kitchen at Milda's Cafe, now open 7 days a week. Milda's Cafe has been cooking up family favorites since 1964. Grab a coffee and sit down for a delicious Philly scramble, house-made rolls, or Denver omelet. Stop in for lunch where you'll find authentic Finnish pasties every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Open weekdays 6 to 3, weekends 8 to 2. Milda's Cafe on Glenwood Avenue, 4 blocks east of Penn.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Tonight we have snow with a low around 24. Tomorrow's cloudy with a high near 34. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 37. Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high near 35. And Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high near 33. The Eat Local Minnesota Restaurant of the Week is Burger Mo's. Located in downtown St. Paul, Burger Mo's is the perfect neighborhood gathering spot before or after XL Energy events. With two happy hours and more than 60 beers on tap, visit them at 242 West 7th Street, St. Paul, or at burgermo's.com.
Well, I should stop pointing fingers, reserve my judgment of all those public action figures.
You are listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett and Sam with you on your Wednesday afternoon. Hunter and Eric going to be hosting the show on Thursday, then Doug Padgett makes his return on Friday. He is on vacation right now. It's not a vote common good tour that he's on. It's an actual vacation. When I was asking Doug about that, he said, no, this is a vote for Doug tour that he's going on, not a vote for common good. So he's out and about relaxing, and he certainly deserves that after touring most of the country by bus for a little over a month and a half. That would be exhausting. I don't know how he does that. Could you pull that off, touring for a month and a half by bus?
I don't know if I could, but in theory, it sounds like a lot of fun. And then a couple weeks into it, you'd probably be like, oof.
I give myself maybe a week before I would start really getting burned out. Although he did have a pretty nice bus. I suppose it would depend on what kind of bus you have, because I don't know, if you're in a kind of a nasty tour bus with real minimal standards of living and amenities, maybe that would be a little annoying. But
see, I'm imagining a real cheap local band bus or something. Yeah, exactly. Is what I pictured.
Yeah. Kind of wonder too if you would start snapping at everyone too, or you just get sick of being with them for so long. But anyways, Doug is back on Friday, back to our usual rotation of when Doug will be hosting the show Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And you got Hunter and myself on Tuesday and Thursdays here on AM 950. But look forward to having him back in studio here on AM 950. So Amy Klobuchar was on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos on Sunday, where she weighed in on the Mueller investigation, immigration, a farm bill, climate change, and of course, everyone knows what's coming next, the 2020 presidential race, and whether Amy is going to be running for president in 2020. Well, when asked about this by Stephanopoulos, here's what she said, quote, "Well, people are talking to me about this, I think in part because I've worked really hard to go and not just go where people, where it's comfortable, but where it's uncomfortable, and I did well in areas that Donald Trump won." She says, "I also am someone that those that are exhausted with politics likes to get things done, but right now I am still just thinking about this, talking to people." I'm sorry to say she has no announcement to make yet regarding 2020. Now, what I find interesting about Amy Klobuchar and the 2020 presidential race, I actually do not think she is going to be the only Minnesotan that will be mentioned in terms of 2020 speculation. I think there's a chance this person I'm going to talk about, I don't think they're a contender for president in 2020, but I could definitely see them as being a contender for vice president in 2020, and that is Tim Walls. If you look at his resume, that's a pretty solid VP resume. He was elected to Congress in 2006, served there for 10 years in southern Minnesota, which is Trump territory, of course, during the 2018 election, which was a very friendly Democratic year. It was an area that actually turned Republican from Democrat, one of only two districts, both of them actually in Minnesota. But Walls proved that he could win this southern Minnesota district. Now he's a governor of a purple state. And I don't know, that resume kind of strikes me as someone that could be attractive as a VP candidate, especially if Democrats end up nominating someone who's on the more progressive side of the caucus. You would look at that and see Tim Walls, someone who's the governor of a Midwest purple state, although I probably argue Minnesota's more of a bluish purple state, who represented, when he was in Congress, a very red rural area. I don't know, Sam, does that sound like a pretty attractive resume for someone as a VP?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he made it on there.
Yeah, just something to think about. There's not a lot of... Yeah, go ahead.
Got to balance. I'm all for progressive politics, but when we're looking on the national level, like you were saying, I think that's a good balance there.
Someone
Not hardcore left there.
I'm not even necessarily saying that you have to balance the ticket. I'm just thinking more from the perspective, if you get someone that's on the more progressive side of the caucus, like a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren, they might potentially find someone like Tim Walls or someone who has a resume like him very attractive when it comes to the 2020 election. There's some other candidates as well that I can think of. I know the Montana governor is a Democrat as well that could potentially be a VP candidate, although he might actually run for president as well. I believe Steve Bullock is his name, but it's going to be interesting to see how many candidates run overall. The Hill was speculating there could be as many as 30 Dems running, including names like Klobuchar, Sanders, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. Wouldn't you find that interesting come debate time? Because remember back in 2016 when we were having the Republican primary and the debates, they always had the main debate, then they had the kids' table. Would you kind of speculate, would Democrats need to have like two kids' table? We'd have like the varsity debate, the JV debate, then would we have to have like the B squad debate?
Just put them in the audience and have their debate up.
They have to ask questions from the audience. Yeah, that poses an interesting question. How do you manage a debate if you have like 30 candidates that have entered the field? I don't know if you have to go by polling data. I think that's what they did back in 2016, in terms of how they were deciding who made it onto the big stage and who was on the little stage. So we'll have to see how that works out, because those debates are going to fire up probably in the summer or in the fall of 2019. And Amy Klobuchar, I'm thinking she's going to be one of those candidates running. Of course, she's playing her cards close to the vest right now. No one's going to announce that she's at least planning to be a major candidate until probably the spring of 2019, I would imagine, at the earliest. I'm trying to think when Obama announced. Was maybe the summer or spring of 2007. But I'm leaning towards Klobuchar probably running. What are you thinking on Klobuchar? First up, do you think she will run?
I do think she will run.
It's okay, so you're on the boat that she will run. I'm kind of torn on whether she would actually make an impact, because while she's very popular in Minnesota, people love her. I mean, she got well over 60% of the vote in the last election. 2012, I think she got close to 65%. So certainly a very prominent and very well-known politician in Minnesota. I just kind of wonder nationally if she has the charisma to really make an impact, because you look at some of these other people who could potentially run, like a Cory Booker, who is no stranger to being in the right place at the right time when it comes to photos. Kamala Harris certainly has a big profile. Elizabeth Warren has a massive following. Bernie Sanders speaks for himself, although I still think Bernie's not going to run, but that's a thought for a different show. But yeah, I could picture Klobuchar having a very attractive resume, but I'm not sure she could really make that much of an impact nationally just because it would be such a crowded field. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, she's one of those, she can't lose in Minnesota, mm-hmm. but it's almost like, it's just like the state itself. I'm going to say something people might not like, but we're kind of flyover country sometimes to New York and to the LAs of the world, and I feel like she's kind of in that same boat there. Like you just mentioned, there's so many bigger high-profile names that everyone here would vote for her, but I don't know if we can get everyone across the country to vote for her there.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. Well, I'll pose this to you out there who's listening. Would you vote for Amy Klobuchar in a 2020 primary? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205, or do you think we would have stronger Democrats that would run? Also, like to get your thoughts on whether you think Tim Walz would actually be a viable VP. Again, I would almost guarantee he would not run for president in 2020. That would be a really bad look to be governor for 2 years, then say, oh, I already want to run for higher office. But as a VP pick, though, I could picture him being definitely among some of the names that people might be looking at. So give us a call here at AM 950. Comment on the Facebook feed or email us, comment at am950radio.com. Speaking of Tim Walz, let's actually speak about what he's going to be doing and what we for sure know he's going to be doing, and that's, of course, being the governor of Minnesota. No more VP speculation. So it is being speculated by some different media sources, including Blois Olson, who runs the Morning Take blog, that family paid sick time is going to be one of their big priorities when the legislature convenes next winter. Or I should say, well, it's technically this winter. I guess in January would be the technical term. But Peggy Flanagan recently gave an interview at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce at a luncheon yesterday, and she said, quote, "I know that this is an issue," by the way, in regards to paid sick and family leave time, "that is overwhelmingly popular with folks all across the country and the people of Minnesota. She says it doesn't matter what side of the aisle, it matters to families. She didn't provide details on what a potential state policy would look like or when it would be brought up for a vote." And another issue she was addressing was tax conformity, not an issue I'm necessarily well-versed on, but so paid family sick and leave time, glad that's going to be part of the agenda. I hope they bring something with health care reform, and health insurance reform is actually the technical term I think people should use. Health care and health insurance are, of course, two very different things, and I think we get that conflated often, but hopefully they bring that to the forefront as well. Some other news and notes in terms of the legislature next year. Democrats, of course, among the DFL, do not want to have a repeat of what happened during the last session when we had that omnibus prime bill that was basically brought up like an hour, I think, before the legislature was supposed to end with this big 1,000-page bill. No one had a chance to read it. Fortunately, it was vetoed by Mark Dayton, but DFLers are trying to take steps to make sure something like that does not happen again. KMSP wrote about this earlier, describing the legislative process as broken, according to one DFLer, who says that they want to stop votes from happening after midnight, limit the number of bills lawmakers can file, and place restrictions on the omnibus bill. Democrats will, of course, have the power to shape the House rules when they convene in January. In fact, I was already looking on Twitter, and some of the reps are already having meetings about what types of reforms they want to have. So hopefully that passes through, because that just really bugs me, too, when you have these big, big bills that are 1,000 pages long, and they drop it on the desk at 11 o'clock at night when the bills are due by midnight. No one has any idea what's in there. And a lot of times what they do, they make this very poisonous where they put some things in there that Republicans really like, that some of their main policies that they want to go with, but they also put good policies in there to try to force DFLers to vote for the bill, saying, well, you're not going to get your priorities if you don't vote for this big omnibus bill. So we'll have to see what happens. I imagine something is probably going to be passed, at least in the House. Not sure about the state Senate, though, since that still has a one-seat majority for Republicans. But Gene Pawlowski is one of the DFLers that's trying to push this reform. He's a DFLer from Winona, and he's asking for public input on potential changes. And he said the next few weeks before the session starts is the right time to consider limits on the omnibus bill, including the one that would ban debate in the dead of night, which I know Matt was joking about that during the last show. How some of these Republicans were saying, well, once we get going, we like debating after midnight. That just strikes me as being, yeah, very mobbish, where you're debating bills in the dark where no one can attend. You have to be up at like 2 a.m. to actually go down and listen to what's happening at the legislature. So hopefully that happens as well. Does that strike you as being very seedy to try to debate bills at like 1 in the morning?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't surprise me at all, though. It reminds me a lot of the Republican voter tactic of make it as hard as possible to go vote. And then a lot of people might just not vote because they don't want to jump through 100 hoops to do that.
Yeah, so we'll have to see where that happens. By the way, coming up this winter, we're going to try to get Kevin Featherly back on the program. He's with Minnesota Lawyer. You might remember him back on the Mike McEntee Show when Mike was here on AM 950. We'd had him on as a frequent guest talking about the latest news at the legislature. We'll hopefully be chatting with Kevin once we get into the next legislative session. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you want to chime in about any of the topics that we've been talking about today, whether it's the privatization of the VA, the immigration debate, and what do we do with some of these asylum seekers who come from countries that we largely broke, or if you have thoughts on Amy Klobuchar and Tim Walz in 2020, or the Omnibus Prime Bill and the DFL trying to ban something like that from ever happening again, give us a call here at 952-946-6205. We'll be back right after this here on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
While shopping for a fireplace insert at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, I was amazed at all the choices. Not just gas, electric, or wood-burning, but also built-in or freestanding, and options in every style from antique to modern. The staff really listened to us, explained the options, and helped us choose a fireplace we absolutely love. Now it warms our hearts and our home every winter. Thank you, Woodland Stoves, for a great addition.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, putting in a word for the EPA Burn Wise campaign. It has important information about clean burning fireplaces. This is an important part of our mission at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. We know that the fireplace has to work. Work with your life, work with your living space, and also be environmentally smart. Come see us. Learn to burn wise. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Visit our store in person or online at woodlandstoves.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Minnesota's appliance specialist at Warner Stellion made a lot of appliance shoppers happy over Black Friday, and we had a blast doing it. We had so much fun, we decided to keep the party going with Black Friday savings on top-brand appliances all week long. Warner Stellion guarantees you'll save on the appliances you want, and you can relax knowing our trusted specialists will handle free delivery, basic installation, and haul away. Get in on the fun. Buy appliances at guaranteed prices from Minnesota's own Warner Stellion.
Native Earth Radio is proud to announce we're adding an extra hour.
1 hour's too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
Great. More time for me to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national Native news with reporters all around the country. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m.
We are awake.
Find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and streaming live on Facebook.
Finding the best foods the Twin Cities has to offer is easy with EatLocalMinnesota.com. Offering the top local and independently owned restaurants, EatLocalMinnesota.com has everything from burger joints to cocktails and fine dining. It's Greek to Me has been a family-owned Lynn Lake landmark since 1982. Under new ownership, the Janakis Karras family offers classically inspired modern Greek cuisine in a sublime space with gracious hospitality. Be sure to visit their charming bar and explore wines and specialty drinks from Greece. Find It's Greek to Me at 626 West Lake Street in Minneapolis or at itsgreektomemn.com. Enjoy all the flavors of Milton's, where they specialize in dishes like grilled jerk chicken, shrimp and grits, and much more, all made from scratch. Pick from Milton's large selection of beer and wine and finish it off with desserts like Bananas Foster. Milton's also serves breakfast every day starting at 7:30 a.m.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett and Sam on your Wednesday afternoon. I got used to saying that. I'm normally the Tuesday host, so it feels kind of weird to be saying Wednesday right now. Stay safe out there with that commute. I'm not looking forward to that. It seems like the first snowfall we get, well, this technically isn't the first snowfall, but it's still among there where you kind of get in that November and December time range, especially late November, early December. People are still trying to get used to the driving on the roads, so it's going to be rough going out there. You and I are anticipating long commutes on our way home this evening, so do take a little bit slow out there. We know it had some snow a few weeks ago, but I'm trying to think, did that technically occur during the rush hour time? Putting you on the spot there, thinking of that time frame, or was that a weekend storm?
Oof. I can't remember.
I can't remember myself either. I think this is our first drive time snowstorm that we've had, if you even want to call this a storm. Once we hit January, this will just be a normal day. People yeah. won't make anything about it. But
this is just a November storm.
Yeah, yeah. This is just a yeah. We'll say, well, why was everyone being paranoid when we were getting like an inch of slush on the ground? But right now it's rough going out there, so make sure you take it slow. Hey, by the way, looking at our Facebook feed, Lisa chimed in about Amy Klobuchar as a potential 2020 presidential candidate, and Lisa said, Amy is a great candidate, but she likes Beto O'Rourke better. And it sounds like he might be running. He's been doing some interviews over the past few days. Of course, during the campaign, when he was running for Senate against Ted Cruz, he was absolutely ruling out running in 2020, which, by the way, is a smart move. Because anyone who says during a campaign for another office that, oh, I plan for running on president in 2 years, they're, of course, going to just get annihilated by their opponent in terms of attack ads. But Beto's been making some comments now, kind of saying that he's not ruling out a 2020 presidential run. So Lisa likes Beto O'Rourke. I know people have kind of said about him, well, he lost his Senate race, so do we really want to put someone up there who's a, quote, loser? Which I don't necessarily buy, because he does have some strengths. Of course, losing in Texas, which is not necessarily good, but he lost by a very close margin in a very red state. But I think more importantly that he could use as a selling point is that he actually had coattail effects in terms of drawing Democrats to the polls and getting some other Democrats elected in Texas races, both at the U.S. level and also at the Texas State House level. So we'll have to see what Beto ends up deciding. What do you think about Beto O'Rourke? Do you think he's going to run, Sam?
I think he's got the big enough personality there. You know, it's not easy to go up against a Ted Cruz in Texas as a Democrat, you know, and make it that close even.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see what happens with him. He kind of reminds me of Obama back in 2008 when he kind of burst onto the scene, out of nowhere when Hillary was expected to be the candidate. We'll have to see. Beto kind of strikes me as having that same type of charisma. But, of course, it's a much different landscape than in 2008 when we pretty much just had two candidates running. We're going to have like 20 or 30 running coming up in 2020. So I wanted to go back to Amy Klobuchar for just a moment, because she commented on something that really annoyed me that I saw over the weekend. And it's because I'm more of a sports guy that this kind of annoyed me. But Major League Baseball apparently donated a few thousand dollars to the campaign of Cindy Hyde-Smith. She's, of course, the Republican candidate for Senate. Well, now, of course, is going to be the winner of that race. She actually beat her Democratic opponent, Mike Espy, yesterday in that Mississippi special election. But she has been in all sorts of controversy with that hanging statement she made about her African-American opponent. And Major League Baseball apparently donated money to her. Now, fortunately, yeah, they did recant and ask for that money back, but I'm kind of thinking here, why is Major League Baseball donating money to campaigns?
I wonder what Jackie Robinson would think about that.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. Yeah. Amy Klobuchar kind of chimed in on this as well, as she was not happy about this in terms of MLB donating money to the campaign of Cindy Hyde-Smith. Now, MLB apparently does have about $250,000 in PAC money that they donate to candidates every year. They donated $245,000 this year to, well, quite the array of politicians, including Republicans like Kevin McCarthy, who's, by the way, the new minority leader in the House, or will be the new minority leader. They also donated money to Ted Cruz, but they also, of course, donated money to token Democrats. That's sometimes what these PACs do that are more right-leaning. They will give to a couple token Democrats, like they gave one to Hakeem Jeffries as well, just to say, well, we at least donated to some Democrats. But I'm a big baseball fan, and that kind of annoys me. Why would Major League Baseball be donating to politicians at the federal level? I could maybe buy it at the state level, not saying it's necessarily right, but I could get the reasoning. Like, if they're donating to someone in California, since the Oakland A's are looking for a new stadium, that they might donate to politicians who would be in support of building a new stadium. But just in general, that kind of strikes me as not necessarily being a good thing.
I'm guessing it has to do with wanting to get more of those Trump tax bills coming.
Keep more of their own money.
I'm guessing.
Maybe that is the case, yeah, because if you're a Major League Baseball player, you, of course, pay taxes in every state that you pay. Funny story, when I worked in an accounting firm when I first got out of college, we had some wild players who had their taxes done at our firm, and it was quite a bear to do those, because you had to actually file taxes in like 20 some different states, because wherever you play a game, you have to pay income tax in that state, which is kind of interesting if you're a professional athlete, that you don't just pay your taxes in the state of where your team plays. You actually pay taxes in every single state that you play in throughout the year. And I kind of wonder how that actually works now if you have Canadian teams, like in hockey or baseball or basketball.
Oof, that's rough.
Yeah.
I have a hard enough time keeping track of just Minnesota here.
Although I would take the burden of having complicated taxes if I were paid $84 million like Joe Maurer.
They have the money to hire a tax professional. Yeah. They don't have to look through the books themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So you might be onto something there in terms of why MLB is donating money to political campaigns. And it looks like lots of Republicans. Wanted to bring this up because yesterday we spoke with Representative Jen Schultz, a DFLer from Duluth. We were talking about gerrymandering and how she's trying to combat that here in the state with some bills she's going to propose. In fact, she proposed some bills during previous sessions that were shot down by Republicans. But here, of course, is why gerrymandering is important and why 2018 was a big step in terms of trying to undo gerrymandering. The Hill put out an interesting map showing which states were controlled by Republicans, which are controlled by Democrats, and which have split governments, and more importantly, which are guaranteed to have a Democrat at the table when it comes to redistricting after the 2020 election. And of course, there is good news there, Minnesota among those states that are guaranteed to have a DFLer at the table, since Tim Walz will be in office through 2022. But other states are also guaranteed to have split government through at least 2022, including Kansas, Wisconsin, which is a huge deal because that state is massively gerrymandered. It's basically impossible right now for a Wisconsin Democrat or for the party itself to get a majority in either their state assembly or their state senate. I think looking at the popular vote in that state, Democrats actually won it by a percentage point or two, but Republicans still ended up with like 63% of the states. So that gerrymander will fortunately be broken in 2022. Pennsylvania also is going to get theirs broken, as well as Virginia. And Ohio is also among that. That's more of an interesting case. They still do have that Republican trifecta, but they actually did put forth some ballot initiatives that basically would send redistricting to an independent commission, which, by the way, is a way I think we should go as well. And that's also what Representative Jem Schultz, the DFLer from Duluth, is also hoping happens. So a little update there in terms of gerrymandering and redistricting, because 2010 was a big year, and that's the main reason why we have all sorts of gerrymandering today. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Make sure you listen tomorrow. It'll be Hunter and Eric in studio. Then Friday, Doug Padgett is back. This has been Brett and Sam here on your Wednesday on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.